The idea, the theme, if you will, for this week, our time of reflection, has to do with what I would call the courage to begin again. Inspired by the springtime, hopefully, the longer days, the way that the earth teaches us year after year what it looks like to start all over again, after, in this year's case, being covered with a layer of cold snow all winter, it never ceases to amaze me to start seeing the green come back, the flowers popping up, the world coming back to life, the miracle of that happening without any provocation, the courage to begin again. The end of February into March has always been, in my life, a time for dying. I used to consider March my least favorite month because so many people that I know have died during the month of March. After doing funerals and memorial services for the past 15 years, I noticed some trends, that more people die when the seasons are changing. I asked a funeral director if it was just me or if indeed this is actually a thing, and he confirmed that it is indeed a thing. Who knows why? The mystery of the motion of the soul, but for some reason, when the seasons are changing, humans tend to transition too. I think a lot about my friends and family members who have lost loved ones, especially recently, to cancer or accident or suicide. I wonder how they find the strength to begin again. Or after perhaps a person has had some kind of medical setback, some kind of life disruption, where does the energy come from in our lives to keep moving forward? My daughter-in-law's brother was paralyzed in a freak surfing accident when he was 12 years old. And when that happened, the doctors told him that he would most likely never walk again. But today, with the help of walking sticks and with a very labored gait, he completes marathons. The courage to begin again. How does the earth start over again every spring? I have noticed, one of my favorite things to notice in the natural world is when a tree is cut back, like to a stump, and then you see some sort of shoot growing up out of the stump, or some kind of flower growing through a sidewalk or out of a brick wall. The miracle all around us. How do people, and also institutions, congregations, groups, gather the courage and the fortitude to move into a new day when hard things have happened? Where does this tenacious, maybe even we could call it stubborn, will to go on living come from? And why is it that some might choose a very life-affirming road? When young Tim was injured, he basically, even at a young age, said, "No way, of course I'll walk again. I'll ski again. I'll water ski again. I'll do all of it." And he is. Why do some choose this life-affirming path while others decide to refuse or even to give in? Nelson Mandela entered prison in 1964. You all know this. After being convicted for his role in resisting South Africa's apartheid government, he spent how many years? 27 years in prison. Much of that time performing hard labor in a limestone quarry. By the time he was released in 1990, the world had changed a lot. Of course, he had too. And at the time, many feared that South Africa would descend into violent retribution. Instead, Mandela committed himself to reconciliation and democratic transition. 4 years later, he became the first democratically elected president of South Africa, and historians widely regard that peaceful transition away from apartheid as one of the most remarkable political transformations in the 20th century. Mandela, this is key, described the moment that he walked out of prison like this. "As I walked out the door toward the gate that would lead to my freedom, I knew if I did not leave my bitterness behind, I would still be in prison." Beginning again for humans often requires a very deliberate choice about what we carry forward and what we choose to release. In January of 2011, U.S. Representative Gabby Giffords was meeting with constituents, you might remember this, outside a grocery store in Tucson, Arizona. A gunman opened fire. Anybody remember this event? 6 people were killed, 13 were wounded, and Giffords suffered a devastating gunshot wound to her head. Doctors were not sure whether or not she would survive, but she did. The injury left her with significant speech and mobility challenges. Her political career was over. Recovery for her required years of therapy. She had to relearn how to walk. She had to relearn how to talk. It required incredible patient daily practice. In the years after that, Giffords returned to public life in a new role. I hope you know about this. She and her husband founded an organization called, very simply, Giffords. Today, she does yoga, she plays the French horn, she travels all over the country doing the very hard work of advocating for gun violence prevention. Both of these people faced a time when life could have hardened them. Prison most certainly could have hardened Mandela, violence could have hardened Gabby Giffords. A person can decide to remain inside the injury or the difficult event. Anger can become the organizing force of a life. Frustration can shape how a person speaks, how they see other people, how they imagine the future. A sense of having been wronged can become a person's center of identity. We all know this. The more difficult spiritual path asks something else of us. It asks us to make the decision to begin again. Spiritual traditions describe this decision in all different kinds of language. In Christian teachings, it might appear as forgiveness. In Buddhism, it appears as non-attachment. Contemporary psychology speaks to us about resilience and post-traumatic growth. Different language, different ways to describe this idea, but it all describes the same movement of the human heart. A person decides at some point that the injury, the loss, is not going to be the final chapter. The decision, of course, does not erase what happened. It doesn't erase the past. The wound remains a part of the story. Beginning again, however, means refusing to let those wounds determine the future. This is where grace enters. Grace appears when someone chooses to move forward without carrying bitterness as their guide. Grace appears when someone decides to live in a way that strengthens and broadens life rather than narrowing it. And the beautiful thing about making a decision like that is that it very often becomes visible to other people. The wounded person has the potential to go on to become the teacher. There is, as I like to say, always gold somewhere in that pile of straw. And it all depends on the choices that we make along the way. When Mandela walked out of prison and chose reconciliation, the entire world watched what moral courage looked like. When Gabby Giffords returned to public life after surviving violence, people saw what perseverance looks like. When people recover from illness, grief, or addiction, and they move forward offering care to others, their lives become quiet, incredibly useful and important teachers. The decision to begin again very often shapes more than one life. It becomes an example, and it provides the courage that many others often need to navigate their own dark days. Congregations, as we know, can face this very same spiritual practice. Every single community, every community, experiences moments when something difficult happens. There are always leadership changes. There is always conflict. There are times when expectations go unmet, when people feel hurt or disappointed. And these moments create opportunities for an entire group of people. Any community can remain inside the injury, and during that time, bad things happen. Conversations circle around blame. People relive the past again and again. But another possibility always exists. A congregation can ask a different question, and that is, who do we want to be now? When a community chooses to move forward with generosity, with patience, with clarity, it demonstrates something very important to the wider world. It shows that human beings can live with maturity and grace even when circumstances are difficult. And that kind of community becomes a living example, and this is the key. That kind of community has the opportunity to become a living example. It's a group of human beings practicing something that I would call rare and valuable, and that is the ability to begin again together, collectively. Life, and I know you've noticed this, offers us these opportunities to practice these things over and over and over. Every new season brings a new moment when the past begins to loosen its grip and the future opens up slightly. The invitation is always the same: to move forward with dignity, to move forward with generosity, and to move forward with grace. And in so doing, to show the world what courage looks like, to show the world what spiritual growth looks like, to show the world what evolution looks like. The first line of this marvelous congregation's covenant is, love is the doctrine of this faith. It's so beautiful. Love is the doctrine of this faith. We say it out loud together every single week. Is it being practiced? Is it truth? Is it being practiced every day, in every opportunity, even in hard times, even in the moments when you would prefer to withhold love? Is it being practiced? Because like any other congregation, it has the potential to be a living, breathing example of love. If love is the doctrine of any faith, of any congregation, it has to be about more than just words. It has to be alive, living, breathing, and a shining example, the building on the hill shining for all to see how it's done. And I want to remind you, we talked in the past about the different kinds of love. There are lots of different kinds. And the love that we talk about, it's not just the easy love. It's not just a hug. It's not just a meal. Those are very important versions of love. But real love, as we know, is unconditional. Real love is hard work, right? If you've been in a relationship for any significant portion of your life, you know what I'm talking about, whether it's with a partner, children, parents, whatever it is. Real love is hard work. I'm going to close with one of the finest examples I have ever heard of a faith community truly living their doctrine. In 2006, a gunman named Charles Roberts entered an Amish one-room schoolhouse in Nickel Mines, Pennsylvania, and shot 10 young girls, killing 5 before taking his own life. Anyone remember this? Members of that Amish community responded in the aftermath of that incredible tragedy by going to the homes of the family members of the shooter and comforting them. They attended his funeral, and they publicly forgave him. They publicly forgave him. Their core Amish beliefs emphasize forgiveness and rejecting revenge. And in those horrifying days after that mass shooting, they lived their beliefs for the entire world to see. It was astonishing. It was utterly astonishing to witness how the Amish community behaved in the aftermath of that unbelievable tragedy. They acted with pure compassion. They were the embodiment of love, even as they were grieving the death of their children. Their children. Think about it. They forgave the shooter, they comforted his widow, and they went to his funeral. So during our couple of moments of quiet time, I invite you this morning to reflect on these ideas. I invite all of us to consider very carefully what lived love looks like. What does it mean, that first line of our doctrine? What does it look like? Are we a living, breathing example of the words of that doctrine? And do we have the courage to begin again in our own lives, in our institutional lives? Do we have the courage to begin again, to love more, to love more deeply, and especially to love in the really, really hard places?